This is the Hot Stove Report.
Going, goodbye baseball!
On 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle app.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Hot Stove as the Mariners get ready for the 2021 baseball season. I'm Rick Riz, along with Gary Hill. Later, we're going to be joined by Dave Sims and Shannon Dreyer. Tonight, we'll have a chance to visit with Mariners manager Scott Service for a look back at the 2020 season and a look ahead to the 2021 campaign. We'll also visit with young starting pitcher Justin Dunn, who in 10 starts last season went 4-1, and we'll also talk with talented young outfielder Taylor Trammell, who was picked up by the Mariners last season in a deal with the Padres. Taylor joins a bevy of talented young outfielders looking to make an impact on the future of this franchise. And in the second hour of Hot Stove, Dave Sims, Shannon Dreyer, Gary, and I will take a look back on the amazing career of Henry Aaron, who passed away last Friday morning at the age of 86. We'll talk about Aaron's impact on the game of baseball, both on and off the field. We'll also visit with Mariner scout John Wiedenbauer, who scouted Kyle Lewis and Emerson Hancock. Gary, with each passing day, we get closer and closer to the start of spring training down in Peoria, Arizona. I'm looking forward to talking with the skipper, Scott Service, and get his take on what this year's ball club is going to look like.
Yeah, it's going to be great to see Scott. It's going to be great to have him here. We're here at the ballpark again, which adds to the fun as we get closer and closer. Doesn't it feel like spring training's inside at this point? I mean, when you start to... we're just a couple days away from February, right? And next time we do this, we'll be in February. It always feels like things really turn and start to accelerate when you get to February, when you can start to count pitchers and catchers reporting on a couple of hands, right? You're getting pretty close.
I can't wait till we get down to Peoria, Arizona. Well, tonight we got a great show for you here on Hot Stove, and we'll be back with the skipper, Scott Service, right after these messages.
Back to more of the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And welcome back to Hot Stove, and we have our very first guest, a very special guest, skipper Scott Service, joins us here in the first hour. And Scott, I know you're excited about the 2020 season after watching 2020. Looking forward to the 2021 campaign, getting ready. How excited are you about getting down to Peoria, Arizona?
I'm fired up. I think everybody gets that itch, so to speak, after the holidays are passed and get into the new year, and looking forward. And now as the NFL playoffs are winding down and the Super Bowl is set, the next thing on everybody's plate is, you know, the spring training and, you know, getting down into Arizona. Hopefully we can start on time. That's the plan right now, and that's what we're planning for. But you never know. We got to make good decisions for the welfare and safety and health of our players, staff, and everybody involved. But right now, it's full systems go. We're looking to do physicals on February 17th and pitchers and catchers on the 18th.
During the course of a regular season, we spend so much time in your office. We get to welcome you to our office here. You're in our booth. I don't remember you making a visit here before, so welcome.
I've never been, and I've been in a few booths up here, but it's normally with the 710 show, whatever, during the season when Salk and Brock used to be up, but I have not been in your booth here before. Riz, you got quite the collection of pictures and some nice stuff. You've been at this for a while, Riz. There's some older pictures of
thank you, buddy. Yeah, 36 years, 39 years of the big leagues. Yeah, you accumulate things. And one thing I like to accumulate are friends, and that's what this game does for us, you know. And you know that, being in baseball, you know, all these years, you get some great memories.
Oh, it really is.
And many more to make.
It's what it's about. It's the people, and it's the connection and the relationships you make. And you know, you look back over the seasons, and there's certain years that were just, you know, unbelievably exciting on the field. But at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, you know, it's the people who are you comfortable picking up the phone and calling in the off season and catching up with and connecting with. And the baseball world is such a small world. It seems like the people you run through at certain points of your career, they cycle through again. You see them
in another form.
And then they're in a different job or whatnot. And it's funny to me to watch. I think right away, again, back to my playing days and playing for Dusty Baker. And now I'm managing against Dusty Baker. It's pretty wild how it goes. But, yeah, the relationships, the people you meet along the way. And what's fascinating about baseball is everybody's got a story. Mm-hmm. You know, you just got to give them the opportunity to tell it and learn from them. And that's what excites me as much as anything about our young team is they've all got their story. And we got a lot of them exciting young players to look forward to and watch their growth and how their careers play out. And my focus, obviously, and my coaching staff is how do we get the most out of these guys? Mm-hmm. How do we get them better? And we spent a lot of time this offseason, you know, looking at each individual player and their plans and, you know, what's the little increment, where it's 1%, 2% better in these different areas, because when you put it all together, if we can get this guy a little bit better and that guy a little bit better and this guy more consistent and keep this other guy healthy, you look up at the end of the day, we got a chance to do something pretty special here. Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed the baseball bash this past week, getting a close look, a different interaction with a lot of the players, but also some people in the organization that a lot of fans may not know or have interacted with. And I come away with, not only do you have a lot of fun people in the organization, but a lot of good people in the organization, really up and down. It really speaks well to what is being built here.
We have a lot of talent.
Yeah.
And the talent is not just in the dugout or in the clubhouse mm-hmm. or on the field. There's a lot of talented people within the building here, and really not just here either, but scouts and the job that they are doing. You know, I look at, you know, again, I just saw the other day we signed three or four young Latin players, and I look at the table and our scouts are there at the table, and then I think back to my days and getting an opportunity to experience all that and what goes into signing a young player and the talent and just kind of how it all works. So talented people in our scouting department, player development department, you look within our analytical department here, our front office, what they bring, and it really – it's a culmination of you're trying to get the best group you can, a group that is a very growth-minded group that it does want to push the envelope a little bit. And how do we get better in this area, that area? Just like I'm talking about with the players. Mm-hmm. And as I look back on kind of what's happened here over the last 5 years to where we're at today versus where we were when we first came in here, where I first got the job, it's unbelievable what a difference it's made and how my day has changed. You know, with the people that I get to interact with and learn from on an everyday basis. So, like I said earlier, it's an exciting time. We got a chance to do something really special here. We got a chance to be good for a long, long time. And I'm focused on being good as quick as we can be good, you know what I mean, and winning a few more games here out on the field.
You bring up a great point. I want to talk about the young players coming up, but there's so many people involved in getting ready for another season. Can you tell the fans what's going on right now to put together that roster of 60 to 65 players, veterans and young players that you want to see down in Peoria, Arizona? Because it's a huge undertaking to get ready for another season. So what goes on like right now in the past few weeks?
Well, it's I've had the unique experience throughout my career is you know, being in the front office and understanding what goes on in an off season, because I think, you know, the off season on the front office side is probably your busiest time.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's going through the arbitration process with your own players, it's talking to free agents, it's talking to other teams about trades and things like that. So knowing how hard and the time put in that Jerry and Justin Hollander and our group up in the front office and what goes into that, I certainly have a tremendous amount of appreciation for that. You know, and dealing with our players and what's going on as we prep for spring training, you know, the focus in trying to take information in. You know, there's so much information out there about our players, and baseball is so numbers oriented anyway. You know, we tie everything to a number. So trying to get to the point where our coaching staff can grasp the numbers, understand what areas certain players need to get better in, and then it's all about getting it in a form that is that our players can understand and put it in play on the field. So, you know, we've done some interesting things this offseason, maybe a little bit different than others past, as we just continue to add to our programs. One of the programs I'm so proud of, and this is great to get on these calls, it's called our Game Calling University. And what we do there is we get all our catchers on a Zoom call once a week. This year, we've really amped it up and taking all the analytics that we talk about our pitchers and we break down two pitchers per week. It takes about an hour a time. We've got 8 or 10 catchers on the call with probably another 8 or 10 other coaches. But our pitching coaches are running the call and breaking it down and trying to get our catchers to understand this is the best version of this player. When he does these things, he throws these type of pitches certain percentage of times. This is where we're trying to locate these pitches and helps our catchers understand where the targets need to be. This is how the pitch should break. The pitch shaping is what we call it. And taking all the information that you get from TrackMan, you get from Rapsodo, tie it all into one bundle and get it to the point where it can actually play out on the field. That takes a ton of time. And the people behind the scenes putting this together and basically driven by our analytical department and our coaching staff have really meshed. Unbelievable, where there's no ego involved, understanding this is what this guy's really good at. I got to trust him. and then this is what this other person is really good at. I got to trust him to do his job. And when it comes together, you got really good communication. There's really good synergy, and everybody's understanding what the ultimate goal is here. The ultimate goal is just get the best out of our players, right? Get them to perform on a consistent basis. And that's what we got going on this offseason, and it takes a lot of people involved in it. It's been fun for me. I get on the calls and I'm sitting back and I'm listening for the most part. I'm looking at the presentation on the Zoom call, and you know they've got all the graphics and the video and everything tied in together, and I may have a question or two to try to understand it. I may have one or two comments about a particular player, but I'm learning. I'm learning from our guys, and I think we've created the environment that really allows people to step up and have a voice. And that way we have a chance to all get better, and that's what's going on behind the scenes.
Sounds like you're playing a simulated game in January.
we've done a lot of that stuff in the past as well, but we're just trying to work ways to get better. It's such a competitive world that we live in, and certainly the baseball world. How do we come up with a competitive advantage on the other team? Because everybody's got good coaches. Everybody's got young players. Everybody's got some veteran guys. I mean, everybody's got front offices that work hard. But what is going to be our competitive advantage? And that's what we're constantly, you know, trying to turn the ground over to come up with that competitive advantage, because it will play out. It will make a difference. And I think we're quite a ways down the road in continuing to have that advantage. And I said it earlier in the call, baseball is about people. It's about relationships. And certainly in any business, you're trying to get your people to buy in and trust. And our players trust. They trust us. They trust what we do, because we know we have they know we have their best interests at heart. And that's about performing consistently out on this field every day.
You mentioned the analytics and the numbers. I mean, you've been in this game a long time in a lot of different roles, from a player to front office to a manager now. What has your evolution been like when you look at the numbers? How has that taken place over the course of the years?
Well, I've learned a lot, and I think the biggest thing that numbers have done for me is it helps me make better decisions, more evidence-based decisions versus just the gut feel. Now, you don't ever want to lose sight of, you know, what you're actually watching play out in front of you, because there is some feel to that. It is an art, and you can't tie, like, you know, I go, Marco Gonzalez is rolling through a lineup a couple times, and here we come the third time around. And I'm not looking at the radar gun when Marco Gonzalez is out there. I'm looking at how's he setting them up, how crisp is his stuff, are they starting to, you know, to get on him a little bit. So that's kind of more of the art, and you're taking into account, you know, what your eyes are seeing. Now, the science part of it is, like, you know, what the numbers say, and understanding that, you know, when it is the right time to pull a pitcher or bring the right relief pitcher in the game or pinch hit for somebody or put a certain lineup together, a certain against another club. I mean, that's where the numbers and the evidence-based decision-making comes in. So I'm continuing to learn. To do that, you have to take, you know, input from a lot of different people, and people that maybe don't have as much experience as I have, but maybe look at the game a little bit differently, because I think everybody in our group has something to offer. But you got to listen to them all, and then ultimately you make your decisions, and, you know, you try to put your players in the best position to have success.
2020 was a learning experience for a lot of kids. Kyle Lewis is the American League Rookie of the Year. Dylan Moore came on and had a heck of a season. You had Justice Sheffield, Justin Dunn in the starting rotation. Looking back on 2020, what was the most important thing that you saw last year that's going to get you ready and be stronger this year?
Yeah, we have laid a foundation. That's the most important thing. And then certainly our guys, some of our guys had great seasons. We have Gold Glove winners, Rookie of the Years, other young players stepped up. But ultimately, what's going to be really pay dividends for us is we've laid the foundation. We have a core group of players that we believe in. They have talent. We've seen that talent play out on the field. We love the makeup of this group and the fact that they're all wired a little bit differently, as they should be. But they believe in what we're doing. They believe in the Mariners and our process. Now, since we have laid the foundation, now we can start building upon it. And that's what I'm looking for, is us taking the next steps with this group. Understanding there's young players still coming. You know, we've got waves of talent still coming behind us, but our organization is unbelievably healthy right now, as far as the young prospect capital that we have within. And that's not just us talking about it, it's people within the industry realizing what we've got, and also the flexibility we have down the road when it does come time to maybe add a piece or a player or two that can kind of get us over the hump, you know. But that time's coming very quickly, and it's exciting. I'm glad to be a part of it and leading this group, because it is a fun group of players to be around every day.
You know, it's been interesting to hear Marco talk this offseason, J.P. Crawford and some of your other veterans talk, and it's been interesting to hear their mindset when you hear Marco talk about winning and winning a division and goals like that. And as a leader of this group, you have to be pretty thrilled about that being a focus for some of your veterans when they're talking about winning ball games.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Yeah.
I think I've made this comment a few times. I think, you know, the average teams are led by coaches. I think the elite teams are led by the players. And I've talked to our players about, you know, holding each other accountable. And ultimately, they have to be comfortable. They have to have that as part of their skill set.
Yeah.
We're getting to that point. And when you hear, you know, the Marcos, and I know how JP is wired, and, you know, what Kyle Seager has done, you know, for this group, and then seeing, you know, what Evan and Kyle Lewis and Chef bring kind of as that next wave of players, Dylan Moore. And then we have another group coming behind that. And what you're doing is you're ultimately just raising the bar. Mm-hmm. This is the bar. When you walk into our clubhouse, this is what's expected. You know, we go out and play. This is how we play. We're not going to win every ball game, but that's the goal. Every night we line up, and every time I put that lineup card in at home plate, I expect to win the game. And all the decisions we make going forward and all of our actions, and, you know, how does this help us win, is how I'm looking at it. So I said earlier today, talking to a group, that, you know, every year I went to spring training as a player, I felt we're going to win. Somehow, you know, if I do this, or if I can get this pitcher to do that, if we can stay healthy, you know, all those, if this young guy comes up and really gives us a shot in the arm, we got a chance to win. And this year's no different. I really do believe we've got a chance to do something special here and get it turned a little bit quicker than maybe some other people think we can.
Visiting with the manager, Scott Service, here on Hot Stove. We'll be back with Scott right after these messages.
All things Mariners, all off-season. The Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And welcome back to Hot Stove as we have a chance to visit more with Mariners manager Scott Service. And Scott, you talked about laying that foundation, and it's there right now. Let's talk about the walls and the roof. Let's talk about the young players, the next wave that's coming, then the wave after that, the Jared Kelnicks of the world, and Julio Rodriguez, Noel V. Marte, Logan Gilbert, Cal Raleigh, and many, many others. Tell the folks who's on the way and who you really want to take a look at this year at spring training.
Well, they're all going to get an opportunity to show what they can do in spring training this year. There's no question about that. Now, you know, are they ready? Are they ready to be here in Seattle? And are we ready to commit full-time, you know, at-bats or innings to that particular player? I've often said they'll let us know. You know, they are very talented. They're wired the right way. In some cases, they do need a little bit more experience, you know, at the minor league level. And, you know, that's the sad thing about what happened last year. We were able to get 60 games into the big leagues, but there was no games down below.
Yeah.
And it's hard to make, you know, big adjustments or to evaluate sometimes correctly when you're playing inter squads all the time. So I know those young players, they're chomping at the bit to get to spring training and to prove to everybody that they're ready, you know, and that's the decisions that we'll have to make as we go along. But I'm looking to lay eyes on what Logan Gilbert looks like, you know, this spring. I think he's, you know, always looking for young pitching to come in and really supplement. And Logan is wired so differently. He's very competitive. He's very routine orientated. He does a lot of things that we love. And the fact that, you know, he's a 6'5" and gets down the mound and he's got good stuff on top of it.
That helps.
You know, it really does. It does help. You know, we've talked about, you know, where Kelnick's at, where Julio's at, you know, Marte. Cal Raleigh's a guy, you know, if we got to find out, you know, if we have an injury or something happens with one of our catchers, can Cal Raleigh come in and fill a void? Is he ready to do that yet? You know, from the outside, you would say yes, but let's see how it plays out on the field. The one thing that there is no, like, you know, set recipe or anything you just go to with players. They're all a little bit different.
Yeah.
And some guys, it clicks a little bit sooner than you think. Some guys, it takes just a little bit longer than you think. But I think we've demonstrated the fact that we are committed to young players. I love the energy, the excitement, the newness that they bring to it. And this group is so full of personality. That's what I'm excited to get our fans back in the stands, because I think once our fans, and it's different watching it on TV than when you're sitting here at T-Mobile Ballpark. You get a sense for how players move and how they interact with each other. And, you know, you just get a feel for their body language and stuff like that. And that's how you connect with players. But getting our fans in the stands so they can really see these young guys play out is, I'm super excited about it. There will be a buzz around this ballpark we haven't seen in a while. And our guys really thrive off that as well.
I think there's ramifications from last year, particularly when it comes to starting pitching, probably for the next couple of years, just in terms of there were so many innings lost, whether you're a veteran like Marco who went 60-plus or a young pitcher that didn't really pitch in a competitive game. How do you think about that going into a season like this in terms of keeping the innings, keeping the jump not as huge for some of your pitchers and that challenge moving forward?
Yeah, it's uncharted water.
Yeah.
We've never done this before. So you have to be open to looking at all different ways to kind of handle the situation. The one thing that is everybody's in the same boat.
Yeah.
Okay, so every team is dealing with it. I think the one thing that we have shown since we've been here with the Mariners is we're not afraid to step out and maybe be open-minded and try some different things. That's, you know, we sat down last year at the beginning when we came back for the 60-game season, realizing that it was best for us to go to a six-man rotation. It is the best thing for us going forward into 2021 based on the makeup of our roster, mm-hmm. trying to keep everybody healthy. And I think the key to the 2021 season for any team is the depth of your pitching, starting pitching and bullpen. Do you have enough guys? Because there are going to be some guys who you know, maybe go down with injury or get a little soggy and they need a 2 or 3 week break. You've got to have depth. You know, our depth is going to be young, sometimes inexperienced. But I've often said, too, that, you know, we're not to spring training yet and the season hasn't started yet. And knowing Jerry in the front office, you know, you're still turning over all the rocks and you're looking at different free agents and how different people can come in and help you and help supplement the talent we have and on the field as well as in the clubhouse. So, you know, it's going to be a situation where you do need to be creative. You need to be open-minded to different things. But I look at it, everybody's dealing with the same situation. Mm-hmm. I like our talent. I think we'll be just fine as far as controlling the workload and making sure our guys are healthy. That's the key. You want to get off to a good start. You want to put yourself in a position where August and September, those games are really meaningful. But to do that, we're going to need to stay healthy. And that's all of our starters, all you know, our bullpen guys. And understand that some things you just can't control. But staying healthy is going to be paramount for anybody this year.
Skip, in the second hour of the show tonight, we're going to visit with one of your young starting pitchers, Justin Dunn. And looking at his season last year, 4-1, 10 starts. But he had a stretch there of three starts where he 6 scoreless innings, 1 hit against the Rangers. Next start, 6 scoreless innings, 1 hit against the Angels. Next start, 6 innings, worked out of trouble, won that game. What did you see out of Justin Dunn? And what does he need to do to take that next step to continue his maturation process?
Coming into the season, you know, when we got back after summer camp, we understood that there was going to be some of our young guys that were going to take a huge step forward. Other guys were going to kind of, you know, I guess, kind of muddle along the way, so to speak, be a little bit inconsistent. And that's kind of where I saw Justin Dunn. I think he did have some really good starts. He had great results. We're trying to get him to tighten up his process a little bit and how he's getting to those results. And for Justin, it's driven by being aware of the count, staying ahead in the count. When he's ahead in the count, all of his pitches seem to work. He's much crisper. When maybe certain nights he doesn't feel like he's got his best fastball, at times he would get a little tentative, knowing that I can't just throw this over the middle of the plate. I have to be perfect. I have to be fine on the edges. And then you start getting behind in the count. So controlling the count is key for all young pitchers, especially Justin Dunn. There's no question. I do know, you know, again, we sit down with all of our players at the end of the year. We were very clear and giving him really good direction on what we thought he needed to work on this offseason. He's in Arizona right now. He's at our complex. He's working with our guys down there. And, you know, he's really serious about being more consistent. And I think we've given him a good outline on and our feeling how he needs to go about doing that. And it really starts, you know, in the offseason, you know, kind of getting his body in a little bit different shape. Hopefully that translates a little bit crisper stuff on the mound when he's throwing and how his body works down the mound. And again, you try to get just 1 or 2% better in these areas, and hopefully it pays off big time at the end.
Skip, I was doing some organizational stuff at home last week, and I was going through some boxes, and I found something that I'm really anxious to ask you about.
Boy.
And it's my 1988 Scott Servais Team USA baseball card from the 88 Olympic team. I was thrilled to find this.
Yeah, it's that actually I think was the first Topps card I ever had.
Yeah, this one,
kid, nice.
They put a set out. It was a heck of a team.
It was a great team.
Great team.
Robin Ventura and Jim Abbott and Tino Martinez, the gold medal team.
Yes, we had the opportunity to play in the Olympics over in Seoul, Korea, back in 1988. We were all 21 years old at the time. We'd just been drafted. Back then, they you know, we were just amateur players. The pro guys were not playing in the Olympics. So we all kind of, you know, put our professional careers on hold, and we went through that entire summer. It was a heck of a summer, heck of an experience. Played in about 25 different cities in 28 days. In the States, it was kind of a barnstorming tour. And then we went over and played in Italy for about 2 weeks in the World Championships, and it culminated over in Korea in the Olympics and winning a gold medal. So unbelievable experience. For me, it really jump-started my career once I got into pro ball, because I was playing with players. I think there were 7 first-round picks on that team. And I was catching, you know, pitchers at such an elite level. I was able to jump right into double A my first pro year, and then in the big leagues another year and a half after that. So it was huge for me. And I didn't go to one of the big powerhouse colleges either, you know, going to Creighton, an opportunity to play on Olympic or USA teams for a couple summers. And that really helped me confidence wise and exposure wise.
How has growing up through the minor leagues and for a young player in the big leagues changed now than when you were growing up, when you were that kid, you know, right out of Creighton?
That's a great question, Riz. Player development has changed so much and how we take care of players. I'll go back to my days and playing in the minor leagues, which you look back, and I guess it is a while ago, but you know, there was no post-game spreads. We didn't care.
It was like you get a hot dog.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't care what the players ate or how they slept or, you know, the workloads that they were going through. At times, it was just like survival of the fittest. Who can make it through? Yeah. Who can make it through the minor leagues? Who can stay healthy, stay on the field? And, you know, I was a catcher, and they'll say, oh, if you're a catcher, you got a great chance to make it to the big leagues, but you got to stay healthy. And you got to stay on the field and continue your growth. And for me, it also meant going to winter ball for a couple years. I played in the Dominican Republic 1 year. I played in Venezuela 1 year, which really, you know, sped up my learning curve in the pro game. So it really was survival of fitness. But nowadays, between the programs that are in place, the strength and conditioning programs, and what we give our players in the off season to focus on and hold them accountable during the season, the mental skills programs. I had never been exposed to mental skills and what they could do to my game until I got to the big league level and was really struggling, and I needed help.
Yeah.
Now it's something that we have, you know, 2 guys who work in our minor leagues and develop relationships with our players as they're transitioning from the college, you know, all conference, all star player to now you're just one of the guys.
Yeah.
You know, how do you establish yourself again, and what goes into the mental side of the game? Because there's so much failure involved in our game. We've got to keep kids wanting to get better and understanding that that's part of it. So it has changed so much in a good way. It really has. I think organizations understand the value of it, and not just, you know, signing a kid and now you give him a big signing bonus, but you got to take care of him. You got to, you know, help him, nurture him along the way. And then, you know, also I think we do a great job of not just the first or second round picks, but, you know, the guys that are picked in the 12th round or the 23rd round and things like that. Those guys are in the same programs. They're getting the same post-game meals, and they're getting treated the same by the strength and conditioning people and the mental skills. So along the way, you're developing some of those players, and those are kind of the nice surprises that show up and contribute to your organization.
Ty France, a 34th round pick.
Exactly. They come from everywhere.
Along those lines, is there anything, I don't know, a piece of information, analytics, anything that as a player you were like, I wish I would have had that. I wish I would have known that when I was playing.
It's a great question. I never understood the true value of controlling the strike zone as a player. You know, I think if I had to change things or do things a little bit differently as a player, I didn't have great power, but I had enough to hit a few home runs once I figured out how to hit a little bit at the big league level. And for me, I hated to strike out. It just was the ultimate forever since I was in Little League or whatever. So I was never a big strikeout guy. I think if I had anything to change, I probably would have traded in a few strikeouts if it would have meant maybe a few more extra base hits and a few more balls over the fence. But for me, the biggest thing is if I would have had an understanding of the value of controlling the strike zone and just getting on base, taking your walk. I think that's I revert back to a conversation I had with Kyle Lewis towards the end of the year, standing in, I think we were in Dodger Stadium one day in BP, and just checking in with him, how's it going? And we started up a conversation, and he says, I get it. I said, what do you get? He goes, 1-for-3 is a lot better than 1-for-4. I just got to take my walk when they when they give it to me. Yeah. When they give it to you, take it.
Yeah.
And I said, you got it, young man.
Yeah.
I said, that's that mentality. You're not looking for a walk when he goes up there.
Right.
But when they're going to give it to you, take it.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, if you have that mindset, and we've seen Kyle do that, controlling the strike zone, lay off the tough pitches, because they're going to start pitching you tough, dude. You're having a good year.
Yeah.
You're starting to notice.
Yeah.
You know, and that's going to continue this next year. But understanding the value and what you do for your team if you can move the line. Sometimes it's just you got to put your bat down and walk to first when they give it to you.
Exactly. Never give up an at-bat.
Yep.
Those are the good hitters. Skip, and then also in the next hour, we're going to talk about the Hall of Fame career of Henry Aaron, who passed away, sadly, on Friday morning at the age of 86. You spent a lot of time in the National League as a player and now managing in the big leagues. Did your paths ever cross with Hank Aaron?
I actually saw Hank Aaron play. Earlier, you know, I grew up in the Midwest in Wisconsin. I was a Brewers fan. At late in his career, you know, he started with the Braves in Milwaukee and obviously went to Atlanta, but he came back to Milwaukee as a Brewer.
Yeah.
And he was a DH there. I think it was in the mid-70s, 75, 76, something like that.
Yeah.
Did have the opportunity to see him play, which I thought was just, you know, unbelievable. It's Hank Aaron. You know, did meet him one time through my travels through Atlanta. And it's like, you know, you meet Willie Mays, you meet Hank Aaron, you meet those types, and it's, you know, that little kid in you, you kind of go back into that shell. And it's great. That's the beauty of our game is, you know, when you grow up and you idolize players and now understanding, you know, everything that's been brought to light and what Hank Aaron went through, you know, as he was chasing the record and the pressures and, you know, all the things that our society threw at him and how he handled it. I mean, I think it's been said multiple times, but unbelievably great player. And you look at the stats, and it's just incredible what he did throughout his career. But better person than player, I think, has been said often about Hank Aaron. And that certainly, you know, that resonates with me because, you know, you don't know that when you're up close to him. But I think, you know, as things played out and as they continue to play out in our society, what he was able how he was able to handle things and go through it as classy as he did is awesome. And it's a testament to his makeup.
I don't know how he did it, but I'm glad that he did it. Skip, and he was signed by the Boston Braves, and he started his pro career in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Yes, he did. I saw that the other day, and I have been to Eau Claire.
You're a Wisconsin kid.
And been to that ballpark before. It's pretty cool. They come from everywhere. Yeah. You never know.
Exactly. Skip, thanks so much for joining us. Can't wait to see you and everybody else down in Peoria, Arizona, here in the next few weeks as we get ready for spring training 2021. Thanks for stopping by.
I look forward to it, Riz. I know we've got about 200 pregame shows ahead of us.
So you do such a great job. Yeah. I always look forward to it.
No,
buddy.
I know. You come ready to roll, and we'll have plenty to talk about this spring for sure.
We're going to have a lot of fun. Mariner manager Scott Service here in Hot Stove, and we'll be back with more right after these messages.
Back to more of the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Here's the pitch. Swing and a miss by Simmons for strike three, and that's it for Simmons and the Angels in the bottom of the fifth inning. And what an afternoon for Justin Dunn. And for Justin, that is strikeout number four on the day. Everybody, the Mariners Virtual Baseball Bash is the perfect event to get you geared up for baseball season. Join media sessions, Q&As, social media takeovers, games, and more from now through Saturday. 60 Mariners, 60 events, one ultimate virtual baseball party. Visit mariners.com/baseball bash for the full schedule and details. And again, welcome back to Hot Stove. Rick Riz along with Gary Hill. Even though it was only 60 games, the 2020 season was a big learning experience for a lot of the Mariners' young players, and one of those was Mariners starting pitcher Justin Dunn. 10 starts last season. Justin went 4-1, and this year he looks to make a big impact in the starting rotation during the 2021 season. Ladies and gentlemen, Mariners starting pitcher Justin Dunn. How you doing, kid? How's your offseason been?
I'm good. Better now that I'm talking to you. How you guys doing?
We're doing fine. Can't wait to get down to spring training. Justin, you made the jump from the minor leagues in the fall in September of 2019. What was it like from going to Double-A Arkansas, where you had a lot of talent on that ball club, and you finally got to the big leagues?
It was fun. It was a lot of fun, especially get to share the opportunity in the moment with Kyle and Donnie and Art. After spending a whole season with them, it was great to get up and, one, fulfill a childhood dream, and then, two, get a taste of what it was like to play at that level and be a part of an organization that is heading in the right direction and getting the reps that it takes to hopefully get us going in the right direction and get us where we want to be.
Clearly a shortened season last year, but what did you learn about yourself going through kind of your first full campaign at this level?
I could take a punch a couple times. No, I learned that my stuff plays. When I'm on the plate, my stuff plays. And so the biggest thing is just commanding the baseball. That's been my big focus this offseason, getting the velocity to tick back up and getting my stuff on the plate, because I saw towards the end of that shortened stint last year that when I was on the plate and commanding the baseball, I was able to go deeper in games, get some outs, and pick up a couple wins along the way. So if I can simplify the outing and just simply command the baseball, I think I'll have some better results personally, and it'll lead to some better team results as well.
Justin, you had a good run there during the course of the 2020 season. I want to go to your third start of the year last year against the Texas Rangers. You had a rough bottom of the first inning. You had a long bottom of the third and a long bottom of the sixth inning, but you worked out of a jam. You hung in there, kid, and went six innings to pick up your first win of the season. What did you learn about yourself that night against the Texas Rangers?
I think it was the ability. That was kind of the start of learning how to bear down and make a pitch when I needed to. And the big thing was kind of learning how to save energy, and credit to Marco and Gravy at that point in Taiwan for teaching me kind of how to step off and compose yourself and save energy, and really just the positive self-talk you need to have and get yourself to be able to make a pitch when that time comes, and trusting your defense. And a lot of credit to Nola and JP, made a couple big plays. And then obviously our lineup for kind of breaking it open and giving us some wiggle room that day was huge.
Going through last year, has that changed how you get ready for this upcoming season? Is there anything you're doing differently now during this off season than in the past?
No, honestly, it's kind of a refresher. You get a little longer off season. I feel a little fresher. I'm not spending as much time getting my body back to normal from the wear and tear of a long season. So I was able to kind of get right back into the weight room, get to putting some weight on the bar, getting stronger. So I'm really happy with the way things have been going, and I'm really excited to get back out here and see all the hard work pay off.
Justin, you had a nice run there of three consecutive starts where you were one of the best, I think, in the league at that point in the season. Start number five of the year was one of your best starts of the year. You went six scoreless innings against the Rangers and gave up only one hit. You retired the first 11 hitters in a row. 15 of 17 batters had you faced in that game. In your very next start against the Angels, you went six innings, shutout baseball again, giving up only one hit again, and you won that ball game 2-1 against the Angels. Then in your next start, you won 4-3 again against the Rangers. That's three starts in a row, three wins, only six hits allowed. I think you only gave up a couple of runs in that third start during that run. How were you able to put together a run of starts like that?
Yeah, that whole run kind of started after the Dodger outing. And you look at that outing on paper, and it was probably the worst outing I've ever had in my life, getting hit in the ribs and then getting beat up a little bit there. But that outing led to some conversations that were had with me, Woody, Skip, our catchers, and even the veteran pitchers that we had on the staff at the time, Marco, Ty, and Gravy, and just kind of got back to who I am, being Justin, and not being scared to pitch up here. And understanding that I'm good enough as myself. So got back into my pre-start routines, did my scouting reports the way I used to, and really just went into each game with the confidence and self-confidence of, I know what I want to do, now I just have to go execute it. And then, like I said at the beginning of the call, just getting my stuff on the plate, challenging guys from pitch one to whenever Skip comes to take the ball out of my hands. And I felt like those three starts right there were the best I had done it in a really long time.
You know, on the show the last couple of weeks, we've really enjoyed, we talked to Marco Gonzalez and Justice Sheffield, and they've kind of talked about the relationship that all of the starting pitchers have. When you think about your teammates, the starters out there, what do you think about in terms of the relationship?
I think we're super close. I think Marco and Graveman and Ty really started it at the beginning of the year of kind of taking Chef and I and Yusei and showing that the team is going to go as far as we go as starting pitchers. We start the game, and ideally we try to finish it. If not, we turn it over to the guys in the back who we have a really good bullpen. So we set the tempo. We set the tone for every game. So if we come out firing, the team's going to come out firing with us. So for that to happen, we have to, one, have each other's back, and we have to be at our best at all times. And they kind of started that whole relationship. And throughout the years, throughout the season, we got super close. And even now this offseason, we have a big starter group text, and we talk almost once or twice a week and checking in to make sure everybody's working. So, again, credit to Marco Gravy and Ty, who's not with us right now, but they were the start of all that.
You know, talking about the addition of Kendall Graveman prior to last year and Tywan Walker a couple of years ago, it was a five-man rotation. But then here comes Kendall and Tywan Walker. And the Mariners wanted to see you pitch and Justice Sheffield as well. And then you go to the six-man rotation where you had the opportunity to make those 10 starts along with Justice Sheffield. How did the six-man rotation, Justin, help you out last season?
I loved it. One gives you an extra day of rest, and that's one thing I learned, that pitching up there and getting yourself in trouble, you make a lot of high-pressure pitches, and your arm tends to drag a little bit if you have a rough day. So that extra day of rest is huge, first and foremost. And then I was able to get off the mound two times in between starts. So those three starts that we talked about earlier, that was kind of the big thing. I had 2 days of work in between to really lock things in, get my game plans locked in, and just go out and pitch on the sixth day. So for me, I loved it. I think almost everybody really liked it. And I think we had some good results with it.
Do you have a favorite moment in the big leagues so far?
I think Marco's game in LA, his CG was fun to watch. Every single game Kyle Lewis touched the field last year was fun. Any moment I have up here, really, like I said, this is my childhood dream. So any time I have on a field, on a big league field, and a big league uniform is my favorite.
Tell us about those childhood dreams and growing up in the Northeast. Who was your favorite team and favorite player? And now you're wearing a big league uniform and inspirational to a lot of, you know, kids up here in the Pacific Northwest.
Yes, sir. So growing up in New York, my dad kind of forced me to be a Yankee fan. So I grew up in the Core Four.
Forced you?
He forced me. I was not allowed. My brother tried to rebel and bought a Red Sox hat. He would throw them away every time he'd buy them.
Oh, wow.
So we didn't have a choice. We did not have a choice. But I grew up in the Core Four. So Jeter, Mariano, Bernie, Jorge, those are my guys. My favorite pitchers to watch were Pedro and El Duque and Roger Clemens. There weren't really many big leaguers that came out of Long Island. So I just wanted to try to be one of the first, and it was something I loved and something I really just pushed myself towards. Tried not to let people doubt me and get me off my track, and I really don't have any other backup plan, so this is what I've wanted to do for a long time.
Speaking of pitchers to watch, when you watch Marco, and I know you're different pitchers, you have some things in common, but you're different in a lot of ways, but are there things that you look at Marco and learn from or take away from what he does?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, Marco's the epitome of an ace. Every time he touches the ball, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get 6 or 7 quality innings. He's going to give us a chance to win every time he touches the ball. But the stuff that I like more about watching Marco is his work in between that you guys can't really see, and his attention to detail. And Woody was I was fortunate enough to sit in on one of his starter meetings with Woody before he started, and to be able to hear his game plan and him verbalize it and then sit down and watch it be executed was pretty special to watch. It was actually the game in L.A., which is why it was one of my favorites. But he's just a workhorse. He's very detail-oriented, and then he's also a great veteran presence and grab you and work with you and also pick you up when you're down, but also encourage you to do more at the same time.
Visiting with Mariners starting pitcher Justin Dunn. Justin, one of your best friends on this ball club is another young pitcher, Justice Sheffield, that we talked about. Your careers are paralleling one another. You followed him after he pitched. You pitched. What was it like being in the rotation all season long with Justice, and how much did you push one another all year long?
Anytime you can be around him, it's fun. You guys know that, so he always keeps you laughing. But baseball-wise, it was good. We somehow seem to go through things at the same time, so it's always good to have each other there and bounce ideas off each other and go through our thought process. We think on a similar wavelength, and then to go out and watch him pitch every day was fun to watch and extremely exciting to see him have the success he had last year. And like I said, yeah, silently it would push me to go out and compete with him, whether he knew it or not. I was trying to either one up him or do just as good. Nobody wants to be the one and make a bad turn in the rotation. So when you got five guys in front of you that are going out making quality starts, you want to do your best, whether it's Chef, you say Gravy, Ty, or Marco. It's always good to go out and watch guys do well before you.
Well, young man, it was a lot of fun watching you pitch last year, 4-1 in those 10 starts. You had that great run in the middle of the season. I can't wait to see you at spring training and see what you guys are going to do here in 2021. It's going to be a fun year, buddy. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you, Rick.
Mariners pitcher Justin Dunn. Thanking Justin here on Hot Stove. I'm looking forward to getting down to spring training into the sunshine. Thank you, buddy. Mariners pitcher Justin Dunn. We're going to be back with more on Hot Stove right after this timeout.